Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Teignmouth Area Talking Newspaper. Today is Friday the 31st of October, Halloween, and we are the Yellow Team. I'm joined for three readers from our team for this week's programme, and they'll introduce themselves later. First of all, I have quite a few notices for you. So this Monday, the 3rd of November, the Macula Book Club meet at Dawlish Library between 2 and 4. And on Tuesday, the 4th of November, Dawlish Community Transport are going to King's Garden Centre in Exmouth, and the cost for that is £15.50. And also on Tuesday, the 4th of November, the Macula Society meet at Bitton House in Teignmouth between 10 and 12. And also on Tuesday, the 4th of November, Dawlish History Society meet at the Manor House in Dawlish at 2:30 p.m. And the talk this time is on Torquay pottery. And on Thursday the 6th of November, the Michaelmas Fair takes place at Powderham Castle between 10 and 3. The tickets are £3.50 in advance or £5 on the door. On Friday the 7th of November, Holcombe residents have their general meeting. Starts at 7:15 in the Village Hall, and there's a talk on swallows, swifts and house martins. And on Saturday the 8th of November, there's a soup and dessert lunch at All Saints Church, Kenton, between 12 and 2. The following week, on Tuesday the 11th of November, Dawlish Community Transport are going to the House of Marbles and Ullacombe Farm. The cost for that is £15.50. And on Tuesday the 11th of November at All Saints Church, Kenton, at 8 p.m, St Peter's Singers of Exeter Cathedral are performing a concert. The cost is £15. On Wednesday the 12th of November, Cofton WI meet at St Mary's Hall, Dawlish Warren at 2:30 p.m. for a talk by the Lions Club about their Message in a Bottle scheme. Visitors are welcome. The cost for visitors is £5. And on Friday the 14th of November, there's a quiz night at All Saints Church, Kenton, starting at 7 p.m. £3 per person and teams of up to 6. And finally, on Saturday the 15th of November, there's a winter warmer at St Paul's Church at Star Cross between 10 to 3:30 and is £10, and you need to book a table. The phone number for Dawlish Community Transport is 01626 88 8777. That's 01626 88 8777. Okay, now on to our stories. So the headlines from this week's papers are: Art Groups Prepares and Conductor Injured at Dawlish Station.
Hello, I'm Lynn Yates, and the first headline is Arts Group Prepares for the Next Stage of Rebuild. Teignmouth Arts Action Group, TARG, is to close for 6 weeks in the new year for the third phase of its rebuild. The Community Hub and Gallery will close on Monday, January the 4th, and reopen on Friday, February the 20th. Planned works include the creation of a large community workshop space on the first floor, the installation of electrics and plumbing on the first floor, and the addition of 4 new windows to add light to the upper floors. On the ground floor, a new corridor will create a third gallery. Gallery 1 will be extended, and Gallery 2 will be used as additional exhibiting space and for workshops and demonstrations linked to the shows. The project will also see the exterior being re-rendered and new signage put up, which ties in with the branding of the makery. A fire and sprinkler system will also be installed to ensure the building meets current fire standards. Much of the cost of the third phase of redeveloping the previously derelict building has been funded by a £204,000 donation from an anonymous benefactor. However, TARG needs to raise an additional £30,000 to install a wheelchair lift to the first floor to ensure the workshop is fully accessible. Donations can be made by visiting www.teignmouthearts.org. Make payments to TARG. TARG was originally established in 2007 to develop the arts in and around Tonbridge through collaboration and community building. The group took on the former Swanson's Garage on Northumberland Place in 2010, and after much negotiation and fundraising, were able to buy the property in 2020. At this point, TARG became a registered charity. More than two-thirds of the purchase price was funded by local donations, explained TARG trustee Liz Lockyer. This building is an asset to Tynmouth, she added. TARG is all about coordinating with other events and groups in the town, facilitating access to art and supporting each other. We want people to feel comfortable coming in. Once the building had been purchased, TARG was faced with a huge project of turning it into a usable, modern, accessible space for the community to gather for art appreciation, education and creation. Phase one was aimed at turning the ground floor into a flexible gallery space as quickly as possible. And after delays relating to COVID and gaining the right planning permissions, the gallery reopened in July 2023. The initial refurbishment was funded by donations, a crowdfunder campaign, and grants from the Architectural Heritage Fund, the Foyle Foundation, the Community Ownership Fund, Devon County Council, and Tonbridge District Council. Phase two, which took place in the winter of 2023-24, saw a roof replacement to keep the building watertight. Now phase three will see the first floor being turned into a usable community space. A fourth and fifth phase will be opened an additional studio space on the first and second floors. TARG is keen to attract additional trustees. The present trustees are only the custodians of this building, trying to develop every corner to make it sustainable for the people of Tynmouth to use for years to come. They announced in the latest TARG newsletter, "We need younger, like-minded people of all ages to step up and keep the vision alive. Until the Phase 3 work starts, TARG remains open with a full programme of exhibitions." And there is a photograph here of TARG back in 2017.
Hello, I'm Maggie West, and my first story is entitled Atlantic Rowers Recognised in Wellbeing Awards. Tynmouth Water Sports instructor Tim Cox and friend Andy Purvis, who completed a 3,000-mile row across the Atlantic Ocean in January, have been awarded two Kent Mental Wellbeing Awards. The duo, who rowed as OR Mighty Mates 2C, were named as Kent Fundraising Champions 2025 and were also given a Maidstone Fundraising Award. The accolades recognise the money they raised for Rochester-based baby loss charity Abigail's Footsteps from the world's toughest row. The pair raised over £20,000 for their chosen charities, Abigail's Footsteps and Dementia UK. Andy, who is from Maidstone, collected the awards on behalf of the team. "We are so proud to be supporting Abigail's Footsteps and their amazing work," he said. And there is a photograph here of Andy Purvis collecting the Kent Mental Wellbeing Award on behalf of OR Mighty Mates 2C.
Hello, my name's Linda Bowman, and my first article is entitled Bonfire Night Fireworks at Risk in Tynmouth. Beach hut owners in Tynmouth could put the brakes on the town's Bonfire Night firework display. The November 1st Tynmouth and Shoreden display at Point Beach could be in jeopardy. For safety reasons, owners of huts which are situated inside the safety exclusion zone have been asked to confirm that they won't be on site. Letters have been sent to all 14 hut occupants from Tynmouth Town Council, but so far most have not responded. The company due to conduct the display has set a safety exclusion zone, which includes the beach huts, which must be observed or they will not proceed with the event. Anyone with a beach hut within the safety exclusion zone is asked to make contact with Tynmouth Town Council before today, Friday, October the 31st.
Zoo hosts third poetry event. Sheldon Wildlife Trust resident poet is to host a third reading at an event next month. Stephen J. Fowler will be joined by guest poets Ellen Wiles, Tom Jenks, and Colin Hurd as they read new poems about animals in the zoo. The event, which takes place at 2 p.m. on Saturday, November the 8th, will see Sheldon Wildlife Trust director Zach Showell lead a walking tour. There will be stops at each animal enclosure where the poets will read new poems to guests and to the animals themselves. Stephen held a similar event in May after a successful first event last year. Sheldon Wildlife Trust appointed Stephen J. Fowler as its first poet in residence in January 2024. His residency includes two public events each year, a small limited edition publication and film documentation. And there's just a small photograph here of what I presume was the event they had in May, people smiling into the camera, dressed in shorts and t-shirts, and I can't see that would be now.
Conductor injured in Dawlish dispute. Rail bosses have thanked members of the public and emergency services after a conductor was assaulted at Dawlish station. Great Western Railway confirmed the conductor was assaulted during an altercation about tickets at the seafront station. He was assessed and treated by paramedics at the scene and did not require hospital treatment. During efforts to tackle the suspects, a member of the public was also injured, being kicked in the face. Two Devon and Cornwall police officers also sustained injuries. A police spokesman said that the member of the public will be nominated for a public commendation for their actions. A spokesman for GWR said, "We can confirm one of our conductors was assaulted during a ticket dispute at Dawlish. Our colleague was assessed by paramedics and did not require hospital treatment. He's now recovering and we are providing him with our full support. The safety of our staff and passengers is our absolute priority. We have zero tolerance for violence or abuse towards our employees, and we would like to thank the police and ambulance service for their swift response and professionalism." A spokesman for British Transport Police said, "They received reports of a member of train staff being assaulted at the station just after 1:30 p.m. on Sunday. During the altercation, Dawlish officer PC George Miller, who made arrests at a nearby bus stop, was assaulted, and a second response officer was also hurt." A spokesman for Devon and Cornwall Police said, "We would like to thank the multiple members of the public from Dawlish who embodied the best of the community in assisting and who offered support, with one member of the public sustaining injuries by being kicked in the face." A 19-year-old woman and a 22-year-old man, both from Plymouth, were arrested and have since been bailed, pending further inquiries. However, officers continue to investigate, and anyone with information is asked to contact British Transport Police by texting 61016 and quoting reference 274 of 19th of October. And there is a photograph of a very empty Dawlish railway station where the assault was taken place.
Dawlish poets launch first anthology. A group of poets in Dawlish have published their first anthology of poems. 14 members of Dawlish Poetry for Pleasure, which meets every month, put together a collection of 86 poems on themes of nature, the sea, the countryside, personal experiences, and Dawlish. Editor David Picton said, "The anthology is a collection of voices, each distinct and engaging. They range from lyrical reflections on sea and landscape to humorous character sketches, myths, memories, and moments of everyday life. These poems are heartfelt, diverse, and deeply personal. Each contributor offers a unique perspective, yet together they create an inclusive celebration of creativity and of our own community. The book, titled Poetry for Pleasure, an anthology, is being launched at the Manor House in Dawlish on November the 7th and will be on sale at the Tynmouth Book Fair the following day at Tynmouth Pavilions. And there's a photograph of the editor, David Picton, and he is holding up a copy of the anthology.
The Christmas shoebox appeal is underway. An appeal to ensure that families in Eastern Europe have something to enjoy over Christmas is now underway in Dawlish. Dawlish Water Rotary Club has launched its annual appeal for Christmas shoeboxes to bring cheer to children and their families in both Ukraine and Moldova. The appeal is being coordinated in conjunction with Christian Response to Eastern Europe, who have continued to provide humanitarian aid to the people of both of the countries. A key part of this collection of Christmas shoeboxes, where simple gifts can make a huge difference and lift the spirits of families facing daily fears. For the traumatized children, the shoeboxes at Christmas will be even more important in showing they are not forgotten, said Rotary leader Bruce Pell. Rotarians will need to collect the shoeboxes from participating schools and groups throughout November. Items in the boxes need to be new to avoid any customs problems. Non-perishable items are required for the boxes. Such suitable items for inclusion in the boxes are pencils, crayons, notebooks, sketch pads, toiletries, gloves, scarves, toys, calculators, torches, Lego, purses and wallets. The boxes can be for an individual boy or girl, while a larger one could be for a family. However, they will need to be labelled boy, girl or family, with appropriate age ranges where feasible, continued Bruce. We are very fortunate that two local businesses have kindly agreed to act as collecting points in the town. Our thanks must go to Dawlish Funeral Care at Scala House on Lawn Terrace, which is set next to the library, and Fraser Wheeler Estate Agents at 19 Queen Street in the town for their assistance.
Dawlish Craft Market supports local artisans. Craftspeople in Dawlish have set up shop at a weekly town centre market. The event runs on Wednesdays and is making use of a community building in the heart of the town centre, which isn't usually used for retail purposes. Dawlish Bowls Club's Green Clubhouse is the new venue for the market, which runs from 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Organiser and craft business owner Becky Conaboy hopes it will be a fantastic opportunity for local craftspeople to widen their customer base or even take a leap by launching a brand new business from a hobby. She said, "The retail centre of Dawlish is largely filled with family-run independent businesses, so it's lovely that this craft market will help to expand our unique retail offering here in Dawlish. We have been regularly attending craft fairs and events in the local area for a while now. Earlier this year, we started a craft fair at the Warren Bridge Inn, Dawlish Warren, which runs throughout the spring and summer and has been a huge success. The landlords have been incredibly supportive of this event and our crafters. Unfortunately, it's outside, so we needed to find a venue over the winter months. Along with some of our regular crafters, we had the thought of the Bowling Green Clubhouse when it isn't being used. We will be there until April, when we will return to the Warren Bridge. Among the crafts on sale will be watercolours and cards, semi-precious stone jewellery, handmade quilts, bags, a variety of fabric items, a range of macrame items, and memory bears to order. And there is a colourful picture of some of the products that you can buy at the Dawlish Craft Market.
Food hygiene ratings for four establishments. New food hygiene ratings have been awarded to four of Teambridge's establishments, the Food Standards Agency's website shows, and it's good news for them all. Restaurants, cafes and canteens. The following ratings has been given to one restaurant, cafe or canteen, and that rated 5 is Little Bean Play Cafe at 34 The Strand, Dawlish, which was rated on October the 14th. Pubs, bars and nightclubs. The three ratings have been handed to pubs, bars and nightclubs, and the first one, rated at 5, is the Royal British Legion at 42 to 44 Park Road, Dawlish, Devon, rated on October the 22nd. And they're also rated 5 web enterprises, in other words, the 10 Tours, at the 10 Tours Inn, Exeter Road, King's Dainton, was rated on October the 16th. And also rated 5 is the Artichoke Inn at the Artichoke Inn Village Road, Cristo, rated on October the 9th.
Petition is launched for zebra crossing at school. A petition has been launched calling for a zebra crossing to be installed outside a Teambridge village school. County Councillor Alan Connett has started the petition for a crossing outside Star Cross Primary School to keep children and the public safe. He said the closure of the A379 main road through the village has resulted in all traffic using New Road. It has highlighted just how dangerous it can be for children going to and from the village primary school, especially as there is no zebra crossing. This isn't just about children, it's about ensuring the safety of the entire community. Since the A379 closure and diversions through the village, there have been calls for safety measures and volunteer patrols at the school. But the road closure caused by building work to the Driftwood Inn has raised longer-term concerns over pedestrian safety. Councillor Connett explained, "The absence of a zebra crossing puts everyone at risk, particularly during peak hours when traffic is at its heaviest." Parents, teachers and local residents have all expressed their concerns about the speed of the traffic. "We also know that it's likely the main road will be closed again at some point in the future. By installing a zebra crossing, we can implement a simple yet effective way to ensure that children especially can cross New Road safely to get to and from school and the playing field." The petition at change.org is calling for Devon County Council to allocate the necessary budget and resources to put the crossing in place. Councillor Connett added, "The past weeks have shown a zebra crossing is the only safe and reliable solution that will force traffic to slow down and stop. It's the best solution for the safety of our children and the community." And there is just one photograph here of the primary school in Starcross.
A feast of classic diesel traction. Following the success of last year's popular one-day event, South Devon Railway will host a special two-day diesel gala on the weekend of November the 8th and 9th. The expanded celebration on the Buckfast to Totnes line promises an unmissable weekend for enthusiasts and visitors alike, showcasing a rich lineup of heritage diesel locomotives along one of Devon's most picturesque branch lines. Visitors can look forward to a feast of classic traction with an intensive timetable operating across both days. The event will feature members of the railway's much-loved home fleet and two visiting locomotives from Devon and Cornwall Railways. Early bird tickets are available until the 2nd of November, offering excellent value for those keen to secure their place at one of the region's most distinctive railway events.
Films at the Library programme returns. The charity that runs libraries across Devon is bringing back its popular Films at the Library programme. From October the 29th, libraries across the county are set to be transformed into cosy community cinemas. And the new season of low-cost screenings promises something for everyone. from a heartwarming drama inspired by a true story, entitled Mr. Burton, to setting sail on an animated animal adventure with Flo. Whether you're looking for an affordable outing with friends and family, or a solo escape into a new story, libraries provide a welcoming space to enjoy film together. The Films at the Library programme is funded by Arts Council England, allowing libraries to make the screenings low cost, with tickets just £3 for library members and £5 for non-members. It's free and easy to join the library, either by popping in or online. All screenings will be accessible with captions, and tickets include free popcorn and blankets. Ray Poole, Creative Communities producer at Libraries Unlimited, said, "Going to the cinema alone has been proven to have health benefits, including relieving stress, with the darkened cinema having a calming effect on your nervous system. It's also, of course, a form of escapism, allowing people to switch off from their everyday lives for an hour or two. Also, libraries are wonderful, welcoming spaces, so you can be completely comfortable coming alone, and you might even meet some new people. We want people to turn up, get cosy, and switch off." Several libraries across Devon are taking part, including Newton Abbott. To discover upcoming screenings and book your tickets via the Libraries Unlimited website.
New Food Village at Agrifest. Agrifest Southwest is set to welcome a delicious new addition this year, the Southwest Food Village, bringing a fresh flavour to the region's premier one-day celebration of prime livestock next week. Held at Exeter's West Point Arena on Wednesday, November the 5th, the event promises a vibrant showcase of agricultural excellence as top-tier livestock vie for prizes, and this year Culinary Lights too, with a food village featuring 12 artisan producers from Devon, each offering a tempting array of locally crafted treats to sample and purchase. From Flapjackery's indulgent flapjacks to Gotland gin, distilled to navy strength on a local farm in Devon, to a mix of delicious sheep, goat and cow's cheese from Sharpham Cheese. Visitors can expect a feast of flavours that celebrate the very best of the Southwest. Agrifest is a free public event open to all. Gates open at 8 a.m.
We have two obituaries this week. The first, Jean Margaret Boycott, passed away peacefully at Torbay Hospital on the 17th of October 2025, aged 85. A cherished mother, she will be deeply missed by all who knew and loved her. Jean's funeral service will take place on Thursday, the 6th of November, at St. Gregory's Church in Dawlish at 11 o'clock. Donations are for the Royal British Legion and can be made by a retiring collection or direct to the charity. All inquiries to J.H. Way Funeral Service, 9 Brook Street, Dawlish, EX79AB. Ronald Addy died peacefully at Torbay Hospital on the 17th of October 2025. Ron, aged 90 years, of Bishop Stainton, beloved and much-loved husband to the late Jean, treasured dad to Sue and Pete, devoted grandpa to Luke and Lauren. He will be remembered with much love and affection by Di, Rachel, all his family and many friends. A service to celebrate his life will be held at Torquay Crematorium on Thursday, the 13th of November, 2025, at 11:30 a.m. Family flowers only, please, but donations for Children's Hospice Southwest or the Dogs Trust. These may be given online at www.stockmanandlorham.co.uk/donations, or cheques payable to each charity may be sent to Les Down, Funeral Director, at Stockman and Lorham, 7 Churston Broadway, Paignton, TQ4 6LE.
telephone number 01803 843710.
Ballet, Bar and Humbug. A classical ballet performance by Ballet Theatre UK of new festive production of A Christmas Carol comes to Paignton's Palace Theatre on December the 3rd. This festive season, Ballet Theatre UK is thrilled to present the return of the beloved classic, A Christmas Carol, back by popular demand. Step into the heart of a traditional Victorian Christmas, where Charles Dickens' timeless tale comes to life. Join Ebenezer Scrooge as he's visited by three enchanting ghosts, guiding him on a journey that reveals the true joy of Christmas. With a beautiful score of festive carols, breathtaking costumes, and the stunning choreography of artistic director Christopher Moore, this heartwarming production is the perfect treat for the whole family. Tickets can be booked at the venue's website, www.palacetheatrepaignton.co.uk, and there is a photo of a still of the production with the various ballerinas in different poses, mainly sort of arabesque and typical pointy toes. Anyway, it's a very nice photograph.
No need to run off and join the circus. Step right up. Devon as Barnum is coming to Torquay's Princess Theatre next year. Enter the dazzling world of P.T. Barnum, where imagination and ambition know no bounds. Hand in hand with wife Charity, Barnum's life and career twists and turns as he schemes and dreams his way to headier heights. Directed by Jonathan O'Boyle and choreographed by Oti Mabuse, this dazzling production features Matt Rawle of Les Miserables, Evita and Cabaret as the charismatic showman himself. With more than 20 actor musicians, acrobats and circus acts in the lineup, prepare for a whirlwind of wonder, music and jaw-dropping feats. The show will run at the venue from August the 25th to the 29th, 2026. For ticket details, see www.gtickets.com, venues, Princess Theatre, Torquay. There is a photograph here of Barnum, and he's surrounded by bright, sparkling lights.
Well, it's getting very close to that time of year again, folks. And so all the Christmas markets are starting to pop up. And there are a couple we thought you'd like to hear about at the pavilions in Tynmouth. The first one is on Saturday, the 22nd of November, from 12 noon to 6 p.m. It's called a mini indoor Christmas market, an afternoon of stalls to come in and browse before Tynmouth Christmas lights are switched on later. There are Christmas decorations, advent calendars, greeting cards, accessories, jewellery, plants, ceramics, fabric gifts and more. And better still, it's free entry. The next one is the following Saturday, the 29th of November, and the Sunday, the 30th of November, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the Saturday and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on the Sunday. It's a large Christmas craft and gift fair, and once again there's free entry and there are over 40 stalls.
Right, and now we have a couple of events taking place at the Shaftesbury Theatre in Dawlish. On Saturday, November the 15th, between 7:30 and 10 p.m., there is Where is Mrs. Christie? It's performed in a one-woman show by the actor Liz Grand. And on Tuesday, November the 18th, in the afternoon from 2 to 5 p.m., I think the Film Society is presenting A Walk in the Woods with Robert Redford and Emma Thompson. It's a comedy adventure about celebrated travel writer Bill Bryson.
short-handed teens battle to the end. It was always going to be a hard day at the office for Tynmouth RFC, plagued as they were by injury and unavailability for the second week in a row, writes Chris Gray. A minute's silence was held before the game, and the club flags were at half-mast following the tragic passing of Angus Rackham. Tiverton opened the scoring with a penalty, but Tynmouth came firing back and skipper Cameron Johns was driven over the line to make it 3-5. The home side remained undeterred though and racked up 4 quick tries, all converted, taking the score to 31-5 after just 22 minutes. Some dogged defence and hard running in attack slowed the scoring rate for a while, but Tivy struck next. Their ill discipline led to a yellow, and Tynmouth used this to their advantage, Jamie Collings scoring the final points of the first half. In less than 3 minutes after the break, Tiverton were back in the points with another converted try, taking the tally to 45-10. Tynmouth continued to battle, stemming the flow of points with some open attack and stoic defence. A chip kick into the Tiverton corner nearly put winger Andy Webber in for a try, but Tiverton got there first. Further damage took the home side to their final total of 64 points, but the beleaguered teens were not finished yet. A technical error at a defensive line-out by Tiverton gave the visitors a free kick, and tap and go putting Mark Dowrick into the corner for a consolation score. Captain Cam Johns was the Tynmouth man of the match. They sit 10th in the league whilst Tiverton are up in 3rd. Tynmouth are due to host Newton Abbott this Saturday in the last 4 of the Devon Intermediate Plate. The other semi-final is between Kingsbridge and Columpton.
And now some golf news. Champion of Champions is crowned. As a culmination of the year's action at Tynmouth Golf Club, the Champion of Champions Day brought together winners from all the individual competitions held throughout the year, and what a talented field of ladies it was. 18 players who had proved themselves as team players to achieve well in the Devon County comps, including retaining the Still Cup, now pitted their skills against one another. After an even front 9, the back 9 was going to prove the test, but even then the final scores were very tight. Catherine Prothero took 3rd place on count back from Lorraine Dunn, both players scoring 35 points. Just ahead of them on 36 was 2nd placed Rosie Arnold, and the winner with 37 points was Liz Tuff, who carded a brilliant 21 points on the way in. Congratulations to you, Liz. And there is a picture of Liz flanked by the ladies' captain, Natasha Waggett, and the men's captain, James Main.
Score big for your community at the Big Tackle. Rowcroft Hospice has announced that its flagship fundraising event, the Big Tackle, is back for 2026 and will be bigger, better and more fun than ever. Taking place on March the 7th next year, the Big Tackle is an 8-mile sponsored walk around the scenic streets and coastal footpath of Torquay, starting and finishing at Torquay Rugby Club. After the walk, participants can enjoy post-match celebrations, including a free pint and pasty, while watching the live screening of the England vs Italy Six Nations rugby match. The Big Tackle is a brilliant day out for friends, family and colleagues, said Rowcroft fundraiser Rachel Haim. It's not just about the walk, it's about having fun, enjoying the scenery and being part of something really special. Every step you take helps support Rowcroft's vital care for local patients and their families, so you can have a great day and make a real difference at the same time. Last March, over 1,000 participants joined Rowcroft Hospice, raising £100,000, enough to fund more than 300 hours of care. One participant, 18-year-old Rupert Stickland from Kingsdainton, walked in memory of his father Craig, who was cared for in Rowcroft's inpatient unit before he passed away last year, aged 54. "It was such a relief when Dad arrived at Rowcroft, and the nurses were fantastic," said Rupert. "Rowcroft did everything for the family. Nothing was too much trouble. I wanted to do the Big Tackle Walk to support the hospice. It's a top charity." With many walking in memory of loved ones, the Big Tackle provides an important space to walk and talk, highlighting the value of connection and support during periods of grief. The event is now open for sign-ups at thebigtackle.org.uk for the early bird price of just £17 per adult, children £10, which includes a free event t-shirt. And there's a photograph of the 18-year-old Rupert Stickland, and he is wearing what looks to be a bright red Big Tackle t-shirt.
Discover the largest UK's policing collection. A fascinating glimpse into the historical archives and memorabilia of policing in Devon and Cornwall is being painstakingly preserved, catalogued and digitalised for generations to come. The Museum of Policing in Devon and Cornwall, a registered charity, has amassed a collection made up of thousands of artefacts, documents and photographs, charting local policing history and heritage dating back as far as 1790. Decades of policing history would potentially be lost without it. The collection is believed to be the biggest single collection in the UK. The collection is owned and funded by the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner, OPCC, and includes police top hats that were later replaced with helmets, capes, some of which have been traced back to their original owners, historic cell doors, decommissioned handmade grenades, replica guns, old-fashioned police lamps, intricately hand-painted and etched truncheons dating back to Victorian times, and even punishment stocks from the 1800s. It is predicted it will take 8 years to digitalise the entire collection. So far, around 10,000 contemporary and historic items solely from Devon and Cornwall have been catalogued. The collection continues to grow on a regular basis, often through donations from former officers who are now retired and items given by families of former police officers. It exists thanks to former police constable Brian Estill. When Devon and Cornwall amalgamated together as one force in 1967, he was concerned that there was no heritage policy within the force. Brian became affectionately known as the original skip diver, as he salvaged many historic items from being thrown out. The collection is now maintained by a small team, including dedicated trustees and volunteers. However, public access to it is limited due to much of it being kept in working police stations. It was originally housed at Middlemore Police Station and was then moved to Okehampton Police Station in 2004. A mini-museum has been established in Tavistock's Court Gate and is open on selected days from spring to early autumn. During the winter, viewing is by prior appointment or for special events in the town. The archive material, made up of thousands of photographs and documents, is held at the Devon Heritage Centre in Exeter and has helped many families find out fascinating information about their ancestors. Throughout the year, the museum is asked to give talks and set up exhibitions at different venues, or give special access for events such as Heritage Open Days. Thanks to recent grants from the OPCC and Devon and Cornwall Police, among others, it is now in a strong position to continue its work to digitalise the collection and seek opportunities to find a permanent home for some of its collection in Cornwall. Police and Crime Commissioner Alison Hernandez said, "Devon and Cornwall are privileged to have such a fascinating collection of policing memorabilia, which tells a remarkable story of how policing has evolved over many decades. It is important that it remains accessible to all, and I am grateful to all those, especially volunteers, who are making that possible, and look forward to seeing it shared with even more widely through online channels." And there's a very interesting photograph here of some of the memorabilia. There's lots of photographs. There's signs with the police sign in blue. And there is a mannequin in what I assume is an old police uniform, but not one that I would recognise.
Anger after St George's flag is removed from chapel. There is anger among residents of a Teignbridge community after the flag of St George was removed from an historic chapel in their town. Until recently, the national flag of England could be seen flying on St Lawrence Chapel in Ashburton. However, on Sunday, October the 8th, the Guild of St Lawrence, the organisation that owns and maintains the Grade 2 listed building, decided to take the flag down. The decision went to committee, who were all in favour of taking it down, though it will still be flown for special occasions, the Mid Devon Advertiser understands. In a statement, the Guild of St Lawrence said, "The Chapel of St Lawrence is an historic public building gifted to Ashburton by the Bishop of Exeter in 1314. After use by him as a private chapel, latterly it was the grammar school, and is now a building used by organisations in the town, the public, members of the court leet, and baron juries who consider it their home. The chapel occasionally flies a flag, for example the Union flag on the King's birthday, and the Union flag was also flown at half-mast on the passing of the late Queen. The poppy flag will be flown during Remembrance Week, and the Portreeves flag is flown for court and law days for the swearing-in of the new Portreeve. Also, St George's flag could be flown if England is in the Rugby World Cup or during the Olympics. However, it is not customary for the chapel to always have a flag up, as they do get damaged in bad weather, and this causes severe damage to some of the flags in the past. Ashburton welcomed several Ukrainian women and children who were housed in Ashburton. Clubs helped them to integrate, and the Ukrainian flag was flown to show them support. It's important to note that the flag had been flying on the chapel long before Operation Raise the Colours, the 2025 campaign, advocating for the display of both the Union flag and the St George's flag in public places. The flag has been there now for a couple of years, and all of a sudden it gets taken down, one resident said. I'm really annoyed about it, another resident joined in. I've spoken to a lot of people about it, and people aren't happy, said another. It seems rather odd you can fly the Ukrainian flag for a couple of years, but put your own flag up and there's all hell to pay, they added. And there is a photograph of the St George's flag flying on the chapel before it was removed.
Tesco Kingstainton launches food drive. Customers at a Kingstainton supermarket are being asked to join a huge food donation drive ahead of Christmas. Now in its 13th year, the Tesco Winter Food Collection is taking place in the Kingstainton Tesco Superstore from November the 27th to 29th. Tesco's charity partners, Trussell and Fairshare, are calling for volunteers to sign up to support the event, with both charities providing a lifeline in response to high levels of need. During the collection, Tesco customers will be encouraged to donate long-life food to support the charities in their work. Donations for Trussell will help its community of food banks provide emergency food parcels to people who cannot afford the essentials, while donations to Fairshare will support its network of local charities and community groups helping to feed people. Collection points will be available in store. Claire De Silva, head of community at Tesco, said every year our winter food collection get such an amazing response from our customers. Matthew van Duivenbode, co-chief executive officer at Trussell, said, "With the support of Tesco, its customers and our incredible food collection volunteers, food banks can stay better stocked, ready to support people facing hunger in their local communities. Everyone should have enough to live on, and alongside our community of food banks, we are working to end hunger for good." Chris Gibbon-Walsh, CEO at FareShare, added, "Food from FareShare reaches a network of over 8,000 charities, enabling them to provide food support alongside access to other vital services. In the winter months, many people accessing these local groups are forced to choose between keeping warm and eating. This makes the Tesco winter food collection more important than ever. We know from experience that having volunteers present in store significantly increases the number of food items donated, and hope that more people than ever will generously give their time this year." And there is a photograph of the Tesco winter food collection, which I imagine is probably a photograph from last year.
That brings us to the end of this week's edition of Here and Now, recorded at our studio in Dawlish on Friday the 31st of October. We hope that you have enjoyed the programme. If you need to contact us for any reason, the telephone number is 07376 147 374. I'll read that again, 07376 147 374. Please leave your name and telephone number on the answering service and we will ring you back. Our editor this week was Jean Cole and the copy and dispatcher was Jean Cole. The programme was produced and directed by Anne Hatcher and Ian Ferguson. So it's time for us to say goodbye from our readers Linda Bowman, Lynn Yates and Maggie West.
Goodbye.
And from me, Jean Cole. Goodbye.